We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with chess players, personalities, authors, and adult improvers about their lives, their careers, and about chess improvement. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey everyone, welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have a very strong chess player joining us this week. He's an active player as well. He's a top 50 player in the world with a peak rating of 2718. He has won or tied for first in many tournaments, the 2007 European Individual Championships, 2014 Gibraltar Chess Festival, 2009 and 2010 Roy Lopez Masters, just to name a few. And of course, he has just released a book with Thinkers Publishing called Chepodinov's D4. Unfortunately, it's not on Forward Chess yet, so I have only seen excerpts of it, but it looks great. And obviously, we've been enjoying talking to various opening authors and getting a big picture view of what's going on with theory and what we're learning from engines and all that stuff. So we're going to dive into that. But one other thing we should know about our guest, he was also GM Vasilin Topalov's second for 7 years. So lot to discuss, and I'm excited to have him on the show. So let's go ahead and bring him in. Ivan Chepodinov, how are you, sir?
Hi, hello. Fine, I'm fine, thanks.
And thanks for joining us. So you're joining us from your native Bulgaria, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in Bulgaria, in Sofia.
And you mentioned you're headed off to Gibraltar in a few days?
Yeah, I go actually in Sunday, yeah. Okay. In 2 days I go to Gibraltar, yeah.
So I should know this, of course, but what event is coming up? Is it the big Open tournament coming up?
Yeah, okay, Gibraltar is one of the biggest Opens in the world, and many top players are playing there. Also, many USA players, for example, Nakamura is playing all the time, and it's very strong, actually. So
okay, yeah.
It's one of the strongest Opens in the world.
Okay, yeah, I'm very, very familiar with it. Just wanted to make sure it wasn't like a separate event, some sort of small...
It's this one, yeah.
Excellent, okay. So how does... it's nice of you to take a break from, I'm sure, what is a lot of preparation, and you've got a family as well. But as a tournament of that magnitude gets closer, what sort of work do you do?
Yeah, okay. Lately, for me, it's very difficult to concentrate on my play and to train like I did it before, because many years ago I was mostly just preparing for my tournaments, and I was doing a lot of fitness, gym, and a lot of stuff. But nowadays it's a bit more difficult because I have a small daughter, and it's okay. You know, everybody who has a kid, you know that it's not very easy now to do all this stuff. But still, I'm trying to train and to do my best as a player.
Yeah.
Mostly as a player, yeah.
Yeah, I and a lot of people listening can relate to the how your professional priorities change when you have kids, even if we can't relate to being a 2700.
Yeah, okay, everything life changes. So, but it's for good, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, and does that make the travel more challenging? Does it make it harder to be away from home?
Okay, for the moment... because my wife is also, she's a world champion, Antoinetta Stefanova, and she also is traveling a lot, so we are traveling mostly together. So, but okay, we have my mother, which she's helping us a lot, otherwise it will be very difficult.
Yeah,
that's... I mean, it's not easy, of course, not easy, but okay, for the moment, our daughter is still young, so okay, we have no trouble to travel, but after some time, it will be even more difficult. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how does your little girl like life on the road? Does she like traveling?
Okay, for the moment, she's just only 1 year old.
So okay.
She doesn't travel yet, but...
I bet she'll like it, though.
After some years, for sure, she will be. So.
Yeah, my kids love hotels. We don't travel very much, but when we do, they're always excited. But let's get to your book, Ivan. You mentioned in the intro that you actually... So this is amazing. You hadn't read an opening book in 10 years, and now...
Oh, even more, yeah.
Wow, even more.
I just put 10 years because I didn't want it to be, you know. when I was a kid, I was studying all kinds of books. I mean, especially I liked books for middle games, end games, and books for example, of some of the top players of the time, let's say like Botvinnik, you know, all these books I liked very much. But lately, yeah, the last years, I didn't read the opening book. Yeah, it's amazing. Because I even didn't do it on purpose. I just didn't want it to be, because everybody is making something in these books that I want to have my own opinion, you know, of the thing. So that's why I wanted just to skip all this stuff. But now I understand that maybe I could do it. I could probably read some... nice books, because there are some good books that definitely you need to have it. Yeah,
that makes sense. And of course, it's not like you weren't using a database, which at your level...
Well, of course, I was using database all the time, of course.
Yeah, so you dig in to write this book, and once you do decide to write it, did you look around at any other ones, just so you sort of felt like you knew what to do?
When I decided to write, I was reading, for example, I liked very much the books of Boris Avruch.
Somehow I had a feeling that you would go there first. His books are so legendary.
Yeah, no, I really like them, because before I didn't check them, of course, but now I really wanted to see how they're writing the books and what is the strategy to make the book, because I really didn't have an idea how to do it. And especially of his books, I really learned a lot. Yeah, I think this was one of the best books of the time, yeah.
Okay.
Opening books, I mean.
Yeah, and we should say that this is going to be a multi-volume project, and volume one is about which lines, Ivan?
Yeah, volume one, it's about against Grünfeld and King's Indian, and third move, F3. So after D4, knight F6, C4, G6, F3. So basically it's covering Zemish against King's Indian and F3 against Grünfeld, yeah.
Yeah, fun fighting chess for sure.
Yeah, it's very fighting and a very principal line that many top players are playing for both covers. So it's very exciting. And this is only the first volume. There will be much more. So.
Yeah, I bet. D4, that's a big topic. So,
D4, there are many, many openings. Yeah.
Yeah. So what surprised you in digging into your research? Was there a line that was there like a particular line that was doing way better or way worse than you thought? Or was there some sort of like tactical rabbit hole that you ended up going down when you found some crazy computer line? Anything like that?
Yeah, no. For me, the idea to write the book was very interesting, because I know that mostly the chess books, for opening, the people are writing for people, let's say, 2000 or 2100, no, something like this. And my goal was to be a bit more even for some strong players, you know, like 2500 maybe, even 2600. And that's why I was wondering how to do it, because it's not very easy. I mean, you need to really to know what you want to write and which lines you want to include and how you want to do it for amateurs or for both, you know, because it's not very easy. So this was the most challenging for me, how to do it exactly. And I think finally I decided to simply to make it how I feel that should be, and just to see if the people will like it, because I cannot skip for myself, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I really, because I was working with many top players, with Veselin Tupov, many others, and for me chess is not only sport, but it's also kind of science. So for me, for example, if I find some, let's say I'm writing the book for white, but if I find something interesting for black, I want to also want to put it in the book, you know, because for me it's not very good if you just skip some lines just to make the book looking very good, you know. So that's why I wanted to make it for both colors, kind of. Okay, especially for white, but also many interesting ideas for black, because, okay, we know that chess is... I mean, we cannot just kill chess with some opening, you know.
It's yeah, yeah.
Very difficult. I mean, okay, maybe some people, they think that, okay, you play F3 and you win all the games. I mean, it's not working like this, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you really need to be prepared for both colors. And that's why I wanted to, even in my intro, I put it that my structure of the book is that I'm giving all the lines for white, of course, but... there are some interesting ideas for black. So if you play Grunfeld or King's Indian with black, there are also very interesting ideas for black. So,
excellent. Yeah. I was just gonna add, there's a free excerpt on the Thinkers Publishing website for anyone who wants to check it out. That's what I was able to check out. But sorry, continue what you were saying.
No, okay. Mainly this was that simply for me, the most challenging was this, the structure of the book, how I want to do it and what I want to put there. And, because I wanted that the people understand what is my understanding of chess and how I look at the openings and how I look at chess in general, you know.
So what would you say about that? What could you, just to give us a little teaser, what is your general chess philosophy?
Yeah, okay, mainly because, okay, I think this was developed very much when I was working with Veselin, because at that point, okay, I was already very strong grandmaster, but of course I was only 18 years old or 17, so I learned a lot from him and with the work with him. So mostly for me, in the openings, especially when you're preparing some opening, I'm not looking only the computer moves, you know, like many of the people of these days they're doing, just looking the evaluation and, you know. And what I'm doing, I'm trying to also understand the positions and maybe sometimes to give... not the best moves for, I mean, objectively, maybe they're not the best moves, but in practice, they're really causing more problems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because objectively speaking, chess is a draw, right?
Right?
So if everybody plays with computer, probably to make a draw, no? In every line, most probably, no? Mm-hmm. So my goal was to show in this book that there's some lines that they're very difficult to play. For example, to play with black, yeah, that there's some interesting opening lines that if you see it for first time, it's very difficult to play over the board. So this is the point of all the book, I guess.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And by the way, I did want to follow up. You mentioned that this book can be read by players up to 2500-2600 level. Of course, we have listeners of all chess experience levels. We have grandmasters listening and people basically brand new to the world of chess. Do you think that for people even rated below 2000, would they be able to benefit from this book?
I really think yes. Because what I said, that I really tried to do it for everybody, so I guess they will find very interesting things also, yes. But it's mostly, I guess, for people 2000 or 2100 probably is the best. But also every rating, every range, because it's in general, it's very good, I think.
Okay, so probably I'm guessing the analysis would be good. Obviously, the analysis, if you're trying to make it... valid for the strongest players in the world, then it's valid for the youngest
players.
Yeah, but
of course, also I put a lot of explanations.
Oh, good, okay.
Basic explanations. I mean, it's a very strong players. They will, of course, understand that it's written for mostly for 2100 or something, but also they'll find the moves very interesting, you know, and the people who are 2100 or 2000, they'll understand because I really put a lot of explanations and how the positions should be played and so on. So I guess for everybody it will be interesting because I already have friends who check the book, they're grandmasters and they really like it. So I guess it will be for all people simply. Yeah, I guess. This was my hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody will like it. So
excellent. That's good news. And with a tournament like Gibraltar coming up, do I dare ask, like I was talking to GM Jan Gustafsson recently, who had just published a course on Double King Pawn for Chessable. Mm-hmm. And he was saying like a couple days later when the course has just come out, it's kind of difficult to pull the trigger actually playing the opening because you're worried someone like, you know, just went to your book, found something and is laying in the weeds waiting. Do you have that feeling with Gibraltar? Will you venture these lines if you get a chance?
No, but I'm playing everything in chess. So for me, it's not real. I mean, I play all the openings. I play e4, d4, c4, so all the moves. So, I mean, for me, I mean, there's some interesting ideas, of course, that maybe if I skip them, probably I could win some games, you know. But I mean, the goal of this book is not like this. So the goal of this book is to be well received from the people. And my idea was just to try to help the players who want to play this opening. So this is my vision of chess. And I just wanted to give it everything. I didn't really think about skipping some lines or, you know, catching somebody or something like this. So
that makes sense. And of course,
because many people I know, okay, I know it's maybe not good to say, but I mean, I read, that's why probably I didn't like a lot of opening books, because sometimes years ago, I remember that some people, they were even very, you know, they liked the idea that they skip some lines and then maybe later they can, you know, they can catch someone something like this. But for me, this is not the goal of the book. So
that's good to hear. Yeah. And of course, you've being a top 50 player, you've played so many just household chess names, Ding Liren, Anand, Ivanchuk.
Yeah, many. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're preparing for someone like that, you mentioned that you do have a wide repertoire. You play a lot of stuff. So how do you decide what to play against a given opponent?
Okay, it depends on many things. Depends on situation, tournament situation. Depends on how I'm feeling this day, and depends in general in the tournament how it's going. Because sometimes, you know, you're in very good shape, then you have more confidence, then you can play very sharp lines because you are very, you know, very confident. And sometimes you don't feel very good, or you don't sleep very well, or something like this. So you decide to play more safely. So it depends on the opponent and also how you're feeling. So that's why it's very good to have a wide opening repertoire, because you can change, you know, you can change your style sometimes, you can just add some things. And if you don't have this, if you don't play everything, then it's very difficult, because if you play only one opening or two openings, you cannot switch, you know, it's very difficult. So because in general everybody is very well prepared, and if you just try to play something just to escape, it's a bad idea usually. So
although there are people at your level who manage to pull it off, right? There are certainly players, like I'm thinking of like Gawain Jones and Bassem Amin, who I interviewed, that are known to have like more narrow repertoires.
Yes, but they have different strategy. They know them very well. They know these openings very well. And sometimes they even, for example, Amin, because I know him very well. I played many times with him. And he plays only King's Indian, and sometimes he has problem in the openings, but he understands very well the position. So sometimes he just doesn't mind to be a bit worse after the opening, but then he plays very well. So I mean, this is different strategy, but simply I'm different type of player. So there are many different types, and I just try to switch, because I really, how to say, what I said before is that I only see chess as science, so not only as sport. So sometimes I just want to switch because to be more interesting for me, you know, just to try different things. So it's for me, it's a question also of this, that I sometimes want to try some different openings, some different ideas maybe, just to see how it's going on. So
yeah, that makes sense.
And, And also I'm working a lot on openings and I'm working a lot on chess in general. Okay, before I was working better, but still I'm working. So, I mean, I have very good memory. So I don't see point to play only one opening for me. I mean, for some other people, maybe it's different. But for me, I just want to try different things because I'm able to do it. So why not? I mean,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, having a good memory has got to be super helpful. Yeah.
No,
when
this
it comes
is like
to
in tennis, let's say. I mean, Roger Federer, I mean, he's playing all kinds of shots, you know, because he can, you know, not because he can play only one shot, but he likes everything because he's very good, no? So
yeah.
If you're good in some things, you can, for example, in openings, I'm very good, I believe. So that's why I can, you know, I can switch and I can play different things. So
yeah, that makes sense. And certainly having worked on a world championship team speaks to the reputation you must have for wide opening knowledge.
Yeah, okay. In the matches with Veselin, I mean, I learned a lot and... all these matches that we were together, I mean, we were working like crazy. So
yeah, I want to come back to that, but I have one more question related to your book, Chaparinov's D4. This one is from a supporter of the podcast. So basically the way it works is if I have an email list for people who've donated to support Perpetual Chess, and when I tell them what the guests and a little bit about their bio. So Jaydeep Chakrabarty wrote in, sorry if I said your last name wrong, Jaydeep, wrote in to ask, he says, I play 1d4 as white always, and I've seen in tournaments an uncommon opening against lower-rated players can make it easier to win. For example, he plays the modern against E4, even though he's a Sicilian player, to catch people off guard. Is there an uncommon opening against D4 that you could suggest for lower-rated players, is his question.
Wow, it's a difficult question for me, but okay, probably I would say something like Benoni or Volga, Benko Gambit. Which it's okay, it's very popular, of course, but I mean, these are the openings that with black you can really make a point. I mean, if you are a better player, I mean, you can make a point because they're very risky openings, Benoni or Benko Gambit, but okay, there are many interesting positional ideas in this opening, so if you're a better player, probably it's very interesting. I mean, when I was a kid, I was playing all the time all these openings, so King's Indian also. Okay, King's Indian is always a weapon, so King's Indian is always very interesting. So.
And now what are your preferred openings? I should know this, but what are you...
Now it's okay. For me, for black, I'm playing also everything, but most recently I'm playing Grunfeld and some kind of knight of 66, so this kind of Queen's Gambit and this stuff.
Okay.
Nimtsu Indian and this stuff, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, well, and do you know yet, Ivan, what volume 2 will be? Obviously, it's going to be a big project, so do you know what you'll tackle next?
Yeah, I think next it will be all this Slav stuff.
Okay,
starting with D5, C4, C6. And maybe something else will be added, but most probably Slav it will be the main stuff, yeah.
Okay, cool. So yeah, listeners, especially if you're a D4 or a Grunfeld or King's Indian player, sounds like the book is worth checking out.
I'm planning to cover everything after D4, so
wow.
I will cover all the openings. Yeah, probably.
Big project. How many years do you think this will take?
No, I think in 2 years, I think it will be, because it will be like 4 volumes. So I think in 2 years, we will probably finish.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah. And of course, now that you're home more with your daughter, that gives you something to work on. So
I'm already working on the second volume, actually. But okay, yeah. I want it to be a surprise. But okay, I'm already working.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so I'd like to circle back to the Team Topalov stuff. But we're going to take a quick break. Later in this interview, you're going to hear Super GM Chaparinov talk about how he started blindfold chess training when he was 4 years old. Us adult chess players can't do that, but we can still work on our visualization. Chessable has some courses specifically designed for that called the Visualize series. Its primary aim is to train visualization, not tactics or calculation. The difference is that you're not looking for a tactic from a specific position, but having to visualize a position 1 to 7 moves ahead, hold the position in your head, and then find the tactic from there. The Visualize courses are a great tool for anyone rated below 2000. Go to chessable.com to check them out or check the show notes to find the link. All right, back to the interview. So, Ivan, according to the internet, you know, unreliable source that it is. You worked with GM Vasilin Topalov for 7 years. Is that about right?
Okay, I need to count, but they're very a lot of years. Yeah, from 2005 to 2011. Yes.
Okay, and you mentioned that you were quite a young man when you started working with him.
I was 17, I guess. Yeah, I was 17.
So did he pick you being that you're from Bulgaria, or how did the relationship begin?
No, the relation is more complicated because his manager, Silvio Danaiov, was my manager when I was 13 years old. So basically we had one manager, and I was playing a lot of tournaments in Spain. And okay, you know that he's living in Spain, so they both are living in Spain. And at some point, simply because I was already grandmaster with 2620 or something, and I was like 17 years old. And okay, also I am from Bulgaria, of course. And simply our manager, he decided that probably it's a good idea just to try to work with Vasilin. And I, once I just went to his apartment in Salamanca, so just to see how it will go. And it was me and another very strong player, but wow. I will not say his name because maybe it's not a good idea, I don't know. And we were together, and then simply he decided that probably is very good because I was good in openings, and we had very good chemistry with him. I mean, we really became friends, so sometimes, I mean, they just decided that probably it's a good idea to try. And then everything started from this. So I went with them in Linares, the first Linares, when he beat Kasparov in the last game, when Kasparov retired, actually. So this was my first time with Vasilin, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, he's a household name in the chess world, but I can only imagine in Bulgaria, he must be an absolute legend. So
He's a rock star. He's a rock star.
Yeah, so
everybody knows him, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So what did it feel like to have that opportunity as such a young man?
No, but at that point, it's funny because at that point, I didn't think about this because, I mean, I was very close with our manager. So, and I knew Vasilin for many years, and I mean, okay, for me he was very strong player, but not something like a god or something, you know. I mean, he was just normal person that, okay, he was very strong in chess. So, I mean, we were friends, and for me it was nothing so big. I mean, we were just working on chess, and I wanted to concentrate on my career, of course, and I was just doing this like opportunity to work with the best player, and then to try to add something in my own chess career. So, I mean, for me, it was not a big special thing. I don't know. But of course, for anybody, because in Bulgaria, he was very big. And especially 2005, he won almost all the tournaments and he became world champion. And I mean, he did everything. So he became even more popular. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking, it looks like the Topalov-Kasparov game you mentioned in Linares was in 2005.
It was his last game. It was Kasparov's last game, yeah.
So you were there on the scene for that tournament?
I was there because I remember that I was playing this Linares Open, and after it finished, they still needed to play like 5 rounds or, I don't know, something like this. And then Silvio, his manager, told me, okay, maybe you can stay with us just to see how it goes. And so I stayed, and everything started from there. So after that, okay, everything, you know, all the history we make. So
yeah.
And this was the first, they just want to try with me if it will work. And okay, it appeared that it worked very good. So.
Yeah, so were you involved in, it looks like this was a Sicilian sort of sideline, the Topalov-Kasparov game. Were you involved in the prep for that game?
No, in that I was very little, in fact, because they had already this idea to play, and I just checked their files, their lines, but this was just the first time, so I didn't really do anything about this game. No.
Okay, and I don't...
But after that, everything, you know, all very interesting ideas. Mostly they were mine, yeah, mostly.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Especially maybe you know this Kramnik, very famous game with Kramnik in Vikanzee, when he played this 12th move, knight takes f7, he sacrificed knight in Moscow Gambit, and from 2008, I think. This was very famous novelty that... it was just a very interesting novelty. So just sacrifice a piece for a pawn, and... I think this was the highlight because this was really very important novelty, and even nowadays they're still playing it. So it's
wow.
Yeah, and this was 2008 with much weaker computers, of course, and I mean, it was very, very difficult to do it. It was just very difficult. I mean.
So, but you'd done a lot of work on it, and how nervous were you when Knight Takes F7 got played over the board in the Chronicle game?
No, actually, okay. We have a very funny story about this game because we prepared this for, I don't know, maybe 2 years before that. I remember it was some Vikings that I was playing. So I was playing against Dutch player Jan Smits, and he was playing all the time this opening. So before the game, I prepared this. I just found this idea and I prepared. And I remember that we were speaking before going to the round, and I told Veselin, okay, I have this idea. Maybe it's interesting. I don't know. I'll just try it. And but he played different openings, so this didn't appear. So after that, we decided to prepare very well against the match with Kramnik in 2006. But still, Kramnik didn't play this opening, so still we didn't have it. Then we had some other opportunities to play, but nobody entered in this line for some reason. So for 2 years, we just, we were just in standby. This line was there, but nobody played against us. Because we had many opportunities to play it, but I mean, nobody entered exactly in this opening. So it was very strange because this was one of the main openings at the time. So, I mean, it was very strange, but somehow Kramnik decided to play it exactly this moment. And, so actually, finally, Veselin played because it was very possible that maybe I would play it against someone,
Yeah.
Not famous, but somehow... I mean, the destiny was that Kramnik needed to play it.
That's an amazing story. Thank you for being so open about it.
I mean, 2 years we had this line. We were preparing for matches and, and finally.
And would you ever, working with a player of that stature, would you ever feel like you needed to hold something back in your own games?
No. Because, I mean, with Veselin and with everybody I'm working, mostly we are working together. It's not like he's my boss and, I'm just trying to deliver some lines, I mean, this is the only thing that I always, that I'm working with some strong players. Before that, I'm just telling them that I also want to improve. So if we want, we can work together and it's like both sides,
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like I just give my lines and, So that's why I can play everything. So, for example, when we worked with Veselin, I could play all the ideas. I mean, I didn't have doubt about this. So,
yeah.
This is very important because I know some players that some top players, they decided, okay, they buy some analysis, but they say, okay, you will not play it never, So, okay, some people, they agree for that. Of course, it's not so bad. But I mean, for me, it's not, it's never like this. So.
That's good. Yeah. And you were, you still are. You're only 33, but even younger then and, climbing the ladder.
I'm still playing professionally. I mean, okay, I'm not a top player, but still I'm trying to do my best. So I'm still.
Yeah, of course. No, there. I mean, it's amazing. Like, I feel like guys who aren't in the top 20 don't get the credit they're due for just how incredible and how much work you guys have all put into chess. So I by no means do I mean to short sell everything that you've accomplished. But moving it forward with Team Topalov, one thing I'm curious about is in the past few months, really, a lot of information has come to light that maybe to people like you was already known, but to the broader chess audience really wasn't. With the Anand Files coming out and with Mind Master by Vishy Anand and Anand Files, of course, by recent guest of the show, Mikhail Oblin. Are you familiar with either of those books?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I've been a bit ashamed that I didn't read this book yet. But somebody told me, okay, one very good friend of mine told me that it's a very nice book of this Anand Files, and I need to read it. I don't know, but I know some things in the book, and it seems very interesting. So
yeah, it's
it seems very interesting. But actually, it seems very similar to many things that happened with Veselin during our matches, because I cannot reveal some things because I mean I never say it, so it's maybe some other time. But I mean, there's some things in this book of Vishy that we had similar stuff with Veselin. So,
interesting.
I mean, it's very interesting. No, because some guy Erwin Lamy from Poland, he, because we worked together in this match with Anand, and he taught me some things that they're unbelievably the same, very similar to what happened with Veselin. I mean, very, very similar. So probably I was thinking that maybe all these top players, they have some things in common, you know, they have some things that... I mean, yeah.
So are these like the interpersonal dynamics, like people, how they get along with each other, or did it have to do with like the actual prep? I mean, I know that there's only so much you're comfortable saying, but what do you mean by there were similar things?
No, there were similar things in their behavior, I guess, in how they, how, for example, you are working for them and then sometimes you don't, you know, you skip some stuff just to be that they are very comfortable with this, with the opening, you know. For example, Veselin, he liked very much to be very confident before the game, you know. Mm-hmm. He liked to be very confident, and sometimes, okay, you know, in the last moment, for example, you had some strange idea for the opponent, maybe not so stupid, but okay, sometimes it's better just not to tell him that it's very interesting, that, you know, sometimes just better to tell him, okay, some move, but it's not nothing dangerous, you know, and then he feels better because he goes with confidence, you know, things like this, that, I mean, people, they're different people, simply, I don't know. For example, for me, it's different. For me, I really want to know all the information and then to make decision, you know, but some people, they need to be confident before the game, so they really need to think that everything is covered and, you know, like, you're winning everywhere, so, you know, you just go and...
Yeah, Anand... So,
Anand... What I understood, that in this book there are some similar things, but I need to read because I didn't read the book yet, so...
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. And Mikhail Ablin, writer of the Anand Files, we've become friendly since I interviewed him, and he... when I told him that I was interviewing you, he mentioned that I could possibly ask you if you have any regrets that Veselin didn't play e4 in the Sofia match, because it's now it's now known that Anand would have played the French.
We had no idea, of course.
Yeah.
But no, of course we don't have regrets, because I think generally with White he was pressing all the games, especially the last one. But all the other games, I mean, he was really pressing, so I think we were very good prepared. The only thing that I regret is this last game, because he, I mean, okay, this I will say it, because this is very interesting, probably everybody will enjoy it, and I don't think it's something very bad. I mean, last game, everybody knows that Veselin, he suicided himself, he just didn't want to make a draw, and he lost this game.
Yeah.
And if he would make a draw, it will be a tiebreak and nobody knows what will happen. But the point is that maybe you all remember that before this match, actually the match started like 3 days after the normal schedule because of this volcano in Iceland. I don't know if you remember, but some volcano that all the flights, they were cancelled for months or something. So it was a big disaster in Europe. So... Anand, he needed to come in Bulgaria, I think from Germany or something like this. He needed to come like 3 days before or something. But then because of this volcano, they were stuck in Germany. And okay, the match basically started like 3 days after that, after the normal schedule. So the tiebreak normally should be, let's say, like 10th of September, but now it's like 13th, you know. And Veselin, he was very pissed about this because, okay, before he didn't know. But after, okay, the last game, before the last game, he understood that it will be exactly the same date that he lost the tiebreak with Kramnik. So, exactly the same date.
That's funny.
And he started to be crazy and he said, like, no, I need to win this game, otherwise the tiebreak will be exactly the same date and, okay, I will lose and so on. And, okay, we were not able to stop him because, I mean, his manager probably need to do something, but he couldn't... save him, and finally, okay, we saw what happened. I mean, he just, in very equal position, he just went with some king h3 and he suicided himself, so he lost this game. I mean, this is only a regret because I believe in some tiebreak, he had still chances. I mean, okay, of course, Anand was very strong, rapid player, but I mean, in some tiebreak, you don't know what will
happen. Yeah, and so was Veselin, of course, so.
No, I truly believe he could probably win this match, but I mean, this game, I mean, he was just crazy. So this was the only regret I have, because the match generally was very good. With White he was pressing. Okay, with Black he has some problems, And I believe he needed to switch the opening, but simply he didn't want it. So, I mean, it's very difficult to... With him, it was very difficult to discuss some things. You know, when he wanted to do something, it was very difficult to,
right.
to do something. So, I mean, because he was losing this Catalan all the time with black, and, I mean, he needed probably to change, but okay, it's already in the past. So,
yeah.
We never know what would happen. If he changed, probably he would lose again. So, I mean, we don't know.
Yeah. Well, a few, first of all, for listeners, we should be clear, this is the 2010 World Championship match between Anand and Topalov in Sofia. And the other thing, I just wanted to follow up a little bit because both Anand in Mindmaster and Mikhail Oblin in the Anand Files wrote about the fact that Anand at the last second, as you alluded to, needed to drive the whole way to Bulgaria. And as you mentioned, this kind of... this delayed the start of the match, and there seemed to be some sort of ill will as residue from that.
Actually, probably this won the match for him, because really Veselin was very pissed that this was exactly the same date, you know, the tiebreak. So, I mean, this really was very big point of winning the match. I mean, it was really good this that they delayed the match for Anand, I guess. Because yeah. He started to have these thoughts, and once he started to have these thoughts, it was very difficult, you know, because he was not thinking about the game, about...
Right, that can be distracting.
And he was really pissed. I mean, I remember that he
Do you think, I mean, I don't know how much you want to speak for Veselin or if you feel comfortable answering this, but do you feel like it was reasonable to be upset? I mean, it seems like to Team Anand, like it's not entirely within their control when there's a volcano in Iceland and they have trouble getting there.
No, of course, I believe it was just a coincidence, you know, that this happened. But I mean, for him, because I know him very well, and he was this type of person that, I mean, sometimes he started to think something is very difficult to take off from his head, you know, I mean, just it was impossible. So for him, I believe really for him, it was the turning point, because before that, this was very good. And before the last game, he understood, because before he didn't pay attention. But exactly before the last game, he understood that the tiebreak will be this day. And he started to be, I mean, he started to be not, I mean, not himself already. I mean, he started to be... to be different person, and you know, just don't think about the game, and yeah, I mean, I truly believe that this lost his match. Truly believe.
Wow, man, amazing to get that.
I mean,
that
okay, it's not the fault of Anand or his team, of course. I mean, it's just coincidence of you know, I mean, this could happen, but simply, and he was not pissed of Anand or something. He was pissed mostly that simply the destiny, you know, just. Turned it to be exactly this day, you know, because it could be 14th, could be 12th, you know, but exactly this day. You know?
I mean, well, what do you think the refusing to shake hands thing is about? Like Anand writes, there was one game where there was a draw, but they decided to go through the arbiter mutually because they didn't want to shake hands. Because
to be honest, I don't remember this stuff. I remember only. With Kramnik they had problems, but with Vichy I really don't remember they had...
Okay.
Probably they were just tense, because the match was very tense, and probably they were very serious and very tense, all of them. Also Vichy, I believe, I mean, he was playing in Sofia, and okay, of course he could think some kind of things, you know. I mean,
yeah, he talks about
normal,
that.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I can imagine, because I was in Russia with Veselin when we played against Vladimir Kramnik, so... I remember what it was there. So, okay, I can imagine that he had something in his mind, you know, and everybody was very tense, I guess.
Yeah.
So also, from Vichy, I heard that he said to some interview that this was his most intense match in his career, you know, I mean, even more than with Kasparov and all these matches. So... probably it was very tense for him also. So.
Yeah, and so for listeners who aren't clear, the... Ivan is just saying that because it was in the other player's home turf, you worry about some sort of subterfuge with people either learning your lines or stuff like that. Like Anand tells a story in Mindmaster about they have basically a security person on their team, and they didn't even tell Anand that it was a security person, but at the end, but he was always like checking the curtains for bugs and stuff like that. And Anand only found out later that that was the guy's actual role on the team. So yeah, it's crazy the level that that these, I mean, understandable, especially given the history, the Soviet stories from back in the day, but still crazy to read.
Especially after the match with Kramnik, because, okay, everybody knows what happened in this match. And after that, I mean, everybody was already thinking in Sofia what could be, you know. I mean, okay, of course, we knew that in Sofia nothing is possible, nothing can be done, because, okay, here is, I mean, it's not Soviet Union, so it's different. But still, I mean, when you go to some other player's country, I mean, you can think that something can happen. I mean, it's normal. I mean,
yeah, it's not crazy to think.
Of course.
Yeah, okay, one more on this match, if you don't mind. So there, in these books, the other thing that has come out is that Team Topalov had access to sort of a supercomputer that was ahead of its time.
Very funny.
Yeah, the Ripka 4. So were you the man behind the curtain with Ripka 4?
Yeah, of course. No, but this is funny because, okay, I'll say this. I mean, I just hope my previous manager, Sigurd Danilov, will not mind. But, I mean, this is true. Because they were claiming that also we had some supercomputer from Bulgarian government and I don't know how many cores, and it was like big deal. And actually this computer existed. They just, from Bulgaria, they at that time they bought this computer for I don't know how many millions. And mostly this is for the weather or something like this, you know, this computer. And they really tried to work on with chess programs and chess engines, but it was not possible. I mean, actually, it was not possible. So Silvio, he just said everywhere that we use this supercomputer and stuff just to scare Anand.
Oh, you know? Okay. That's amazing.
But of course, we had Ripka. I don't remember if it was 4 or something, but it was some kind of special Ripka. But we had in some normal computers, I mean, some at the time very good computers, but not something special. Because this supercomputer, it was like million cores or something like this, I don't know, 1,000 cores. And this was very good computer, but they couldn't make it because they really tried, but they couldn't make it because we had only one mount and all these IT specialists, they couldn't make it. So finally he decided just to say that we are using it, but okay, finally we didn't use it. So
it sounds like it worked. I mean, Anand spends a lot of time talking about it in Mindmaster.
We had very good computers, very good at the time, probably the best, but not this one. I mean, not super computer, you know.
Yeah. No, but
not
I also
like Alpha Zero or something.
Right. Yeah. And I also meant that the psychology worked. The fact that
the psychology was brutal. I mean, it was really big. I mean, it was just amazing. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being so open. That's just incredible.
No, but this is in the past already, so I guess there will be no problem. So
yeah. And are you still working with Topalov at all?
No, from many years now. From 2011, I don't work with them. And okay, with Veselin, I still guess we're in good conditions. But with his manager, we're not in very good relations. So I'm not working with them. But okay, I always follow his games, his tournaments. So, I mean, I wish him all the time very good, all the best.
And what about...
We friends forever. I mean, I really liked him. And the time we spent together, it was just... very good, yeah.
And what about Romain Edouard, of course, of Thinkers Publishing, who put us in touch? So how was he involved? I mean, I know he's written a book about this, but what were your interactions with him?
Yeah, actually, he stole my book because I mean, I still can write a book about this because I have so many stories. But it will be probably if I decide to write, it will be not about chess. It will be about the matches and the time spent with him, because I mean, I know so many things that I mean, many stories. And maybe one day I will do it.
That would be
but
great.
Yeah, okay, he stole the book because, okay, I worked with Veselin like 7 years and he worked, I guess, 3-4 years. But the book is very good. I read the book, it's very nice. And actually, maybe he's one of the main reasons I started to write these books, because these volumes. Because he was in touch with me and with Daniel also, and we were in touch, and they somehow convinced me to do it, because from the beginning I was not really sure that I want to do it. And also he was very helpful with the process of the book and helping me with questions and everything. So I really want to help him, because without him I couldn't do it like this, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Well, they're doing great work. I mean, it seems
they're doing, because the book was very good, but when they, you know, sold the book and tried to add some things, I mean, they did it very good. I mean, they really changed many things. So I mean, I'm very thankful for their work. I mean,
yes, and as we are. So finishing up, Yvonne, I know that you've got a lot going on. Let's just hear a little bit more about, well, there's a couple things, actually. One, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about your chess. So so you don't have as much time as you used to work on your chess, but when you do, is it mostly opening work, or are you able to work on other aspects of your game still at your level as well?
Yeah, of course it's mostly opening because it's, I mean, nowadays it's very important, but of course I work on some other stuff. For example, I'll tell you now my schedule, how it's more or less, because before it I was concentrating on everything, but nowadays it's just impossible. That's why I'm trying to focus on the most important stuff. So mostly every day when I can, I'm trying to go to gym. For me, it's very important to be in good shape. Actually, now after our interview, I'm going to play football because I really like it.
Excellent.
What I want to say is that sport for me is very important to doing sport because it's you need energy. And okay, we know that Carson is very good, in very good shape, and many other top players. So I mean, you really need to be in top shape to be a very good chess player. I mean, I don't have doubt about this. I think it's just very important. I mean, maybe nobody noticed this, but I think it's maybe 50%, because when you are very strong, you need to be in very good physical shape. So I think it's very good. And this is this I'm trying to do it every day. And with chess-wise, I'm trying to, okay, openings, of course, but also to calculate. I'm trying to calculate every day, like 2 hours if I can. Even sometimes I'm just at home with my girl and I just try to, you know, with my daughter. And when she's playing, I'm just taking some positions and, you know, just calculating on my mind. So on blindfold.
Oh, good for you. So
I mean, I'm just trying to all the time calculate a little bit every day because it's very important. And openings, okay, openings, it's the main stuff, but not only openings, like, you know, just moves, but also understanding the positions that you reach and understanding how to work on these positions, how to play these positions, you know. For example, I'm trying to, when I reach some, let's say, 20 moves, some small advantage, and I try to see how to play later, you know, and to understand more the position. So this is the main goal for me. Of course, what I said, that sport is like, I really wanted the young players, if somebody is listening to me now, to understand that this is very, very important. So if you want to reach a top level, I mean, this is just impossible to do it without this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, before maybe nobody understood it, but lately everybody knows that this is the most important stuff. And I think actually this is the main reason that Carson is so strong and always he's winning the last games. And you know, I mean, just also Vasily, I just want to mention that when 2005, when he was very strong, all the time he was starting very bad, but then lately he was winning all the games in the end of the tournament. So, and he was very good, in very good shape. I mean, he was going to gym all the time and running like 10 kilometers all the time, you know, and he was very good shape. So I think that's why he was so strong, I mean, in the end of the tournament. So this is very, it's very important. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. The top guys are so fit now.
Yeah, but this is only the top guys, because I noticed that some young player, maybe they don't pay attention what to this, but I mean, they really need to do it, because otherwise they will not be in the top. I mean, it's very difficult.
Good advice. And in terms of working on your calculation, what do you just pick positions from openings, or how do you get the positions that you're working through?
No,
blindfold?
I just take some books, for example, studies or some book for calculations. I mean, there are so many lately that, I mean, you really just take some book, but I try to do it on blindfold because it's more productive for me. I mean, it's interesting. And also sometimes when I analyze some position and then, for example, I go to, I don't know, somewhere to gym or something, I'm trying to think about this position. And many times, actually, I'm finding some very interesting ideas when I, you know, when I'm not in the chessboard, but when I'm just somewhere and I dig a little bit. And then when I check, it's very interesting idea. So sometimes you need to open up your mind, you know, and to give him some time, and then you can find. For example, I remember that many times I work on some positions like 3 hours, 4 hours, and then I couldn't find the exact way how to play, you know. I know that I'm very close, but, you know, there's no exact way how to go. And then I give myself some time, and after that, okay, you find ideas always. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, there's been research about that outside of the field of chess, just about how, like, you often have bolts of inspiration in, like, the shower and stuff like that.
This is like the famous phrase of Einstein. I mean, everybody knows it, you know, that in the shower he's all the time have these ideas. So, I mean, it's something similar that sometimes you need to, you know, open up your mind and then you just, you find the way. So... In opening sometimes works because many times even with supercomputers, sometimes they don't show immediately the, you know, the most nasty way for, you know, to take the advantage or something. And sometimes you need to show him some move, you know, it's not so easy. And that's why you need to, you know, sometimes to open up your mind and then you to deliver the final touch, yeah.
Yeah, and regarding the blindfold training that you do, is that something that you placed an emphasis on as a developing young player, or is like was that always a big part of your training?
It's also very important. Yeah, I mean, I played blindfold when I was 4 years old. Because even my father, because he was, he was my first coach, and he's a candidate of master, so he's like 2100 or something like this. And he teach me to play blindfold, so from that point I was playing all the time blindfold. Even he was winning some bets because nobody believed him that I was playing blindfold when I was 4 years old. But okay, it's true. And later on, yeah, even with Veselin, many times I remember that we were just in, let's say, in sauna or in swimming pool, you know, and we just lay down and then we sort of have some ideas and try to make it work, and then always there were some interesting ideas that we were finding during our blindfold, you know, sessions. So,
wow.
I mean, even, okay, you know, maybe even Chuk is also this kind of type. He's all the time, you know, okay, he's a bit strange, of course, but I mean, he's all the time thinking about some positions, you know. I mean,
right.
It's like, also, I am very impressed of Gelfand, let's say, because all the time he's calculating during the game, he's watching somewhere else, you know.
Right,
and,
yeah.
Okay, I'm not this type of person, but I mean, I think that it's really very useful to be very good blindfold because you can imagine the position better, you know, and sometimes the pieces are disturbing you, so it's better to calculate without piece because it's you can imagine the position much better than when you see the position actually. So
yeah, that's one of those things that only I feel like only 26 and 2700 say it. I find that hard to relate to.
No, but this is happening with a lot of training. I mean, okay, imagine I'm now 33 years old and I was 4, no? So like
right.
Like 9 years, I'm like all the time doing this, and okay, and I'm even not in the top 10 in the world. I mean, imagine the other guys. I mean, they're probably even much better. So I mean, it's you need to work a lot. The chess is very difficult. I mean, if you need to be in the top, it's really very difficult. You need to be very, it's like every sport. I mean, you need to, or every profession. I mean, you need to be very focused and you need to do the best things and what you can every day. And maybe you hope to succeed. Otherwise, maybe you not, but okay. You have hope to succeed only if you do all the best you can. So
yeah, and just two more things. So, any specific book recommendations or improvement advice you would give based on?
Okay,
on...
From openings, you understand that I cannot give.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe in general, I like all these books of Csaba Bauer. They were on calculations. And I also like the book of Volokitin of calculations. I like very much. It's already old book. I guess it's like 5 years already. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's perfect your chess.
But it's very, very good book.
Yeah.
And if you want to improve your calculations, I think this is very, very good book.
Okay.
And Csaba Bauer, I like his books because they're every year they have the most interesting positions of the recent year. So it's... I mean, it's very good because the old books, I know all of them. So that's why I need to, you know.
New positions. That's amazing. Yeah, that you just know them all.
And, okay, now I have some book that I need to read. I didn't read, but I don't remember who wrote it. So I don't want to be ashamed to say. But it's about some Russian name. It's about some studies. So I need to really to check it because I heard very good reviews from some grandmaster that is very good book and probably for my level. So
wow, okay.
I'll need to check it because I don't remember now his name, and but it's just new book, just very new book. So, I think this books for calculations are, yeah, are very, very good, yeah. But okay. Volkitin I really recommend because it's a very nice book.
Yeah, often recommended by strong players like yourself. And for listeners who are lower rated, those are definitely higher level recommendations, but certainly the advice of working on your calculation and your blindfold play is something that anyone can take to heart.
This book, I think that I mentioned, this is for all levels. I guess it's also for weak players. So, I mean, it's...
The Russian one or the Perfector Chess?
No, the Volkitin book, I think.
Okay. Cool. And last thing, Ivan, this has been really, I've loved this interview, especially all the insights about Team Topalov is stuff that only a handful of people can tell in the world, but it's great to hear about your career as well. So are you enjoying yourself as a chess professional? Is it a fruitful life for you?
Yeah, of course I enjoy very much. And I'm 33 years old now, but I still... Maybe it would be like a joke, but I still think I can improve, you know?
Of course.
So I'm still improving, trying to improve. And this is what I do. I mean, I really enjoy playing chess. I enjoy studying chess. And I enjoy winning at chess. So, I mean, I really try to improve. And this is what I'm doing here. This is,
okay. And are you doing any... Are you doing any training for players or still focused on your own game and your books and helping elite
mostly
players?
Mostly on my play, but sometimes I have some lessons with some players, of course, but mostly because I don't have a lot of time. I mean, I'm really traveling a lot and playing a lot, so I mean, there's no time for everything, but sometimes, of course, I can give some lessons to some people that I like, so I can... give lessons.
Okay.
But mostly even with the book now, I mean, I need to spend a lot of time also on the book, so now it's becoming really difficult to do everything. But I'm trying, yeah. I mean, I'm not doing anything else. I mean, I'm just doing sports, playing with my daughter and doing this. So
there's
no
big
things that I'm doing, so yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. And if there's anyone who would like to keep up with your progress or to contact you, is there a way for them to do that?
I'm mostly on Facebook. I have accounts, so I mean, I'm sharing there a lot of stuff. So if somebody wants, always can check on internet or, my tournaments, the tournaments I'm playing, they're very popular mostly. So everybody can just Google and it's very easy. So,
okay.
But my Facebook, everybody can check because it's easier. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, Ivan, I'll be rooting for you in Gibraltar.
Thank you a lot. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, this actually won't come out for 10 days. So by the time it comes out, people can see how you're doing. So
yeah, thanks. No, actually, it was a very good interview. I'm really glad that you asked me. And I hope maybe some other day we can do it even more. Yeah.
That would be awesome. Yeah, I would love to. Especially, you got to write that book. That book sounds amazing.
Oh, one day I'll write, but I think first Vasily needs to retire because they're very interesting stories. I cannot tell
okay.
now.
Okay, that makes sense.
I can tell now.
Well, so. It seems like he might be on his way to retirement. So,
but I need to hear from him that he retires officially, then I will do it. Yeah.
Awesome.
But there's time. Yeah.
Yeah, something to look forward to. Okay, well, good luck and thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, as always, to my producer, Matthew Passy, for making Perpetual Chess happen. I also want to thank all you guys and girls who helped me grow Perpetual Chess. That includes everyone who tells a friend about the show, everyone who writes a positive review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, whatever other podcast platform you may be on. All of it is appreciated and all of it keeps me going. But of course, most of all, I want to thank the people who provide financial support to the show. I would like to give extra special thanks to the following people and entities. They are Chessable Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Apprent Chess Twitch channel, Andrew Bach, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porto, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, Dan O'Hanlon, Danny Davidson, David Schreiber, I am Dimitri Schneider, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Greg Natel, Greg Shahadi, Guven Manet, Jens Green, John Jernigan, John Cromarty, John McCarthy, Kelly Palmer, Kevin O'Callaghan, Lone Pine Chess, Lorraine Dore, Lucio Casada Silva, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oplin, Mike Zelazny, Moonmaster 9000, Peter Sodi, Reuven Fisher, Seattle Chess Club, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of Strong Chess, and Todd Kennedy. And I would also like to thank the following people and entities. They are Aaron Waffler, Ace Fayega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, FM Andre Terakov, Andrew Perry, Better Chess Training, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard Lynn, Brian Mullish, Chad Hilton, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Shabri, Chris Lott, Christopher Wood. I am Christoph Zalecki, a.k.a. Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Courtney Fry, Daniel Gell, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Lucas of U.S. Chess Federation, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Cramley, CEO of Chessable.com, Dalen Shelton, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith. I am Alec Donnie Ariel, the Fox Valley Chess Club of Aurora, Illinois. Dr. Frank Tortoris, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt, Gerard Barta, Giovanni Russo, Hans Schut, Harish Srinivasan, James Aspinwall, James Benastia, James Moore, Jason Anfang, Jason Woolham, Jaydeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Jerry Wells, JJ Stranad, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jordan Goodwin, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, GM Josh Friedel, I am Kare Christensen, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Kapala Krishnan, Larry Reiforth, Laura Belyovsky, Martin Knudsen, Matthew Passy, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, the Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Allard, Miguel Arospiti, Mike Clem, Mr. Mike Shahadi, Nate Salon, Neil Bruce, Olaf Mueller Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Roy Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel, Scott Daugherty, Scott McKinnon, Sebastian Finsterwalder, WGM, Tatia Vabrahamian, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Hott, Tom Edsel, Tomas Komanich, Tony Rotella, Tyrin Price, Victor Vrankulj, Wayne Beam, William Brock, William Juniper, William Peterson, FM Zhao Chang of Chess1000.com, Zhivko Stoyanov, and that is everyone. Thanks, everyone. Catch you guys next week.
Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.